1 Samuel chapter 22, and we're in verse 20. We're almost at the end of the chapter. Now, if you remember, Saul has so progressed, or I guess we should call it regressed, in his unbelief and his hatred of God, that he has now slaughtered the priests of the Lord. All right? He has had Doeg the Edomite, who is a base fellow, Doeg the Edomite to slaughter all of the priests of the Lord. Why? Because they were friendly to David. Right? David in our text represents the child of God who has a divine call to be the king of Israel. He has the divine call to be a royal priest in the family of God. All right, so David represents the Christian in his life on earth. Saul represents the traitor. All right, he represents Judas Iscariot and every other hypocrite and false believer who wants to be regarded as a Christian but has a heart of rebellion, which may not come out in overt acts of rebellion at first, but eventually it will. All right? And so Saul represents, like Judas Iscariot in the New Testament, that heart of rebellion in one who professes to be a child of God, but whose heart is filled with anything but genuine faith. All right? And then people like Doeg the Edomite and all of the other characters in the world are the various people that we bump into in daily life, who are in varying stages of ignorance and unbelief. All right, you know, some people that you meet, they are Christians, they're members of other churches, you don't know much about them, but when you talk to them, they seem to have some semblance of faith. But because you really don't have solidarity with the church that they go to, there must always be a kind of a question mark in your mind. You don't just blandly say everybody who goes to a church is a devout Christian. Not even everybody who goes to this church is a truly devout Christian. There are people who come to church for whole sorts of reasons. I'm not particularly singling anybody out here, but people come to church for all kinds of reasons. All right? So you can't judge by outward things. You have to, on the one hand, when somebody professes faith, you have to accept that profession of faith and rejoice that they have given you that confession of faith. But you must always watch and see. Not in a judgmental sense, but in the sense that when you are separated from someone because of doctrinal differences, you got to be careful. All right? And so we have a bunch of players in the story: faithful David and all those who align themselves with David. And then there is Saul and all who align themselves with Saul. And then there's the various other people who drop in and out of the story. All right, so, as I just said, Saul has slaughtered the priests of the Lord. So his hatred of God and his utter lack of faith and understanding have shown themselves big time. Verse 20. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. So one always gets away, right? And he fled after David, and Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priests. And David said to Abiathar, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of my father's house. Now notice this. Notice this. David hears that Doeg the Edomite has been the instrument through which Saul has murdered the priests of the Lord. And when David hears about it, he says, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of my father's house. In other words, he does not make excuses for himself. All right. He said, I knew that time when I went to the sanctuary and I was talking to Ahimelech the priest and he gave me the showbread. I knew when I saw Doeg the Edomite that something was rotten going on. Right. And so he says to Abiathar, abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life. But with me thou shalt be in safeguard. All right, so he says, listen, stay here with me, you know, and my men, and you'll be safe to the degree that we are safe, you will be safe. All right, so he brings this guy into his protection. And then some time goes by, and then they told David, saying, behold, the Philistines fight against Keilah, and they rob the threshing floors. Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go and smite these Philistines? And the Lord said unto David, go and smite the Philistines, and save Keilah. All right, now, what's this inquiring of the Lord? Right? The priest of God has a thing called an ephod. It is a garment that is worn on the chest and it's tied around. And there's a little pocket on the inside of it that contains the Urim and the Thummim. Right? The Urim and the Thummim. What in the world are they? They're like a pair of dice, all right, that God told Moses to make. And when the priest of the Lord, when someone came to inquire of the Lord what they should do, they would ask the Lord through the priest a question, and then the priest would take these dice and he would throw them. And he would discern the Lord's answer. And the Lord had promised, the Lord had promised to honor that system. All right? In the Old Testament. Now, in the New Testament, we also see, casting lots. All right? Which is a Bible way of saying shooting dice. All right? And you want to know what's the right thing to do, you have two alternatives. You cast lots to see what's going to go on. So, for example, in the first chapter of Acts, Peter gathers the church together while they're waiting for Pentecost to come, and they don't exactly know what to do. Peter says, listen, we got to replace Judas Iscariot. We got to find men who have been disciples from the very beginning, who have, so that they can be eyewitnesses with us. And so they cast lots. They found all the people, all the guys who had been disciples from the very beginning. And they chose two of them, Justus and Matthias. And they cast lots, and the lot fell upon Matthias, and he took Judas's office. He was numbered with the 12. All right, so. So anyway, that's when it says that David inquired of the Lord. That is, with the priest of God, he asked the Lord a question, and the Urim and Thummim were cast, and the answer of the Lord was given. So should I go up and smite these Philistines and cast the lots? Yes, you should go up and smite the Philistines. Verse 3, and David's men said unto him, behold, we be afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we come to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines? So David's men are a little bit afraid. You know, geez, you know, we've had it tough these past couple of months, and you know, it's not getting any easier. Frankly, David, we're afraid. All right. So David inquired of the Lord yet again. All right. And so for the sake of his men, he goes back and he inquires again. And the Lord answered him and said, arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into thy hand. So the second time. Now, normally this would be a sign of weakness and a sign of doubt. But here, David is not acting on his own behalf by inquiring the second time. He is inquiring on behalf of the weak. And so it's not that David doubts, but that he wants his weak men, who are weakened by experiencing trouble, being on the run, being out in hiding, on the lam, as it were. And so in order to encourage their hearts and make them brave, he inquires twice of the Lord. So David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with a great slaughter. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. And it came to pass when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, fled to David to Keilah, that he came down with an ephod in his hand. So that's how they could inquire of the Lord. This is a kind of an afterthought. When Abiathar showed up, he had the ephod in his hand with the Urim and Thummim. So that's how. And it was told Saul that David was come to Keilah, and Saul said, God hath delivered him into mine hand, for he is shut in, entering into a town that hath gates and bars. You sneaking little wretch. And Saul called all the people together to war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. Now, here's this little difficulty that comes into the story. You see otherwise decent people who are thrown into a quandary because Saul is the king and David isn't, even though through the prophet Samuel he has been proclaimed to be and anointed to be the king after Saul, yet Saul is the king. And so many people are confused as to their loyalties. Should I be faithful to Saul, or should I be faithful to David? Right? And And the one who is demanding this contradiction, because to be faithful to David is to be faithful to Saul, because David has already shown himself to be faithful to Saul, whom he calls the Lord's anointed. All right? So it's a false dichotomy. But the people are kind of caught in it. And so some people, they kind of side with David because they see that David is endeavoring to be faithful to Saul. But other people, they see Saul as the anointed king of Israel, and they feel an obligation to be faithful to him. And if he doesn't like David, well, I guess David's no good. Right? So there are people who are kind of caught in the middle. Now, some of them are motivated by unbelief. Others are simply confused because Saul has placed a false dichotomy between them, and they're kind of, their faith is made unsure by the false alternatives. You see what I'm saying? So here, we're going to see that this happens. Saul gathers all the people together to war, to go down and besiege David and his men. And people who had praised David for killing his 10,000s, who had rejoiced in David slaying Goliath, they're in Saul's army going to go down and smite David and his men. All right? And some of them with hearts of wickedness, others with confused hearts because of a false alternative. Right? And David knew that Saul secretly practiced mischief against him, and he said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring hither the ephod." Then said David, "O Lord God of Israel, thy servant hath certainly heard that Saul seeketh to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me up into the hand of Saul? Will Saul come down as thy servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I beseech thee, tell thy servant." And the Lord said, "He will come down." And then said David, "Will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul?" And the Lord said, "They will deliver thee up." Then David and his men, which were about 600, arose and departed out of Keilah and went whithersoever they could go. And it was told Saul that David was escaped from Keilah, and he forbore to go forth. All right, so David asks two questions. Number one, is Saul coming to get me? Yeah, he's coming to get you. All right. Then the second question is, will the men of Keilah, even though I saved them from the Philistines, will they hand me over to Saul? Yeah, they will. So David and his men get out of town. And they go on the lam. Right? They are on the lam. Now, they are in southern Judah. And I don't know if you guys have maps. You probably do not have maps in your Bibles. But anyway, you see on this map, you see the Dead Sea there? Blue thing. Well, all along the western shore of the Dead Sea, there are all of these mountains and ravines and caves. This is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. There's thousands upon thousands of caves and hiding places and nooks and crannies that people who want to escape from the law can go to and be relatively safe. All right, Masada. If you've ever heard of the fortress of Masada. That was on that western shore of the Dead Sea. So that's that general area is where David and his men go. So they're living in the hills. They're living in the mountains, in caves. They have got themselves positioned in a place of relative safety. All right, and Saul is constantly trying to find them and get them. So they go forth, and David abode in the wilderness in strongholds, verse 14. In the wilderness in strongholds, and remained in a mountain in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God delivered him not into his hand. And David saw that Saul was come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. All right, so there, David and his men are in this wilderness area, and they are in particular hiding in a forest. So it's kind of like Robin Hood and his merry men, right? And so they are in a forest. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. And he said unto him, "Fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee, and that also Saul my father knoweth." And they two made a covenant before the Lord, and David abode in the wood, and Jonathan went to his house. All right, so while David is on the run, and they are living hand to mouth in this situation, in this forest, in the wilderness of Ziph, Jonathan comes out, and he encourages David and says, "Don't be afraid. My father's not going to get you. You're the one who's going to be king." And so the two of them encourage one another. And then came up, verse 19, then came up the Ziphites to Saul, to Gibeah. So a delegation of people who lived in the city of Ziph, after which the wilderness area was named, the wilderness of Ziph, because there was a city called Ziph. And so the Ziphites, I'd hate to be a Ziphite just because of the name. It's like being called a zipper, you know, Ziphites. Anyway, so saying, "Doth not David hide himself with us in strongholds in the wood, in the hill of Hakalah, which is on the south of Jeshimon? Now therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of thy soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him into the king's hand." All right, so now, with no provocation at all, these Ziphites take it upon themselves to actually actively plot against David. You know, it's one thing to be kind of confused and to not really know which direction your loyalties go in. It's another thing to actively seek the overthrow of David, of the faithful. You know, and so the Ziphites here, they reveal themselves to be of one mind and spirit with Saul. That is, they are not pious children of God, because they are seeking the overthrow of the one whom God has blessed. All right? And so they have now actively shown, without being without being moved by any necessity, they show their wicked hearts. So, Saul says to them, and notice the false piety here, "Blessed be ye of the Lord, for ye have compassion on me." So he uses God's name, but because he has no faith, when he uses God's name, he breaks the second commandment. Everyone who uses the name of God without faith breaks the commandment. All right? Just like everyone without faith is automatically, perpetually violating the first commandment. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. If you have no true and saving faith, you are always violating that commandment. And so it is. Every time you use the name of God, but you have no true and saving faith, you are taking the Lord's name in vain. Right? And these conditions are perpetual. A person in unbelief can only succeed by their works in aggravating that condition of being under the condemnation of the law. All right? The law is the law. It never stops being the law. All right? And we need to hear what the law says. So, anyway, "Blessed be ye of the Lord," he said with false piety, "for ye have compassion on me. Go, I pray you, prepare yet and know and see his face where his haunt is, and who hath seen him there. For it is told me that he dealeth very subtly. So go and keep an eye on him. Get intelligence for me. Keep me in the loop so that we can move on him." All right? Because he's a sneaky little devil. All right? He's a sneaky little devil. "See therefore and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hideth himself, and come ye again to me with the certainty, and I will go down with you, and it shall come to pass, if he be in the land, that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah." And they arose and went to Ziph before Saul. But David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the plain on the south of Jeshimon. All right, so David very wisely takes his men and skedaddles from the wilderness of Ziph, and he goes to this other wilderness of Maon. And there, again, it's in the same general region, but Maon is another city, and this is the wilderness that is in the vicinity of that city. So David moves his hiding place. Saul also, verse 25, "Saul also and his men went to seek him, and they told David, wherefore he came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David and his men were on that side of the mountain. And David made haste to get away for fear of Saul, for Saul and his men compassed David and his men round about for to take them." All right. Now, this is a kind of a humorous picture. There is a conical shaped hill, large conical shaped hill. David and his men are on this side of the hill. Saul and his army are on this side of the hill. You know, kind of like going back and forth like this, and the hill is preventing them from coming together in a clash, because every time Saul's men go this way, David's men go that way, and so it's kind of back and forth. "And there came a messenger to Saul saying, Haste thee and come, for the Philistines have invaded the land. Wherefore Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. Therefore they called the place Sila Hamath Likoth, right, which is the Rock of Divisions. Right? There's always a reason for why they name things the Rock of Divisions. And David went up from thence and dwelt in the strongholds at Engedi. Right? So, there's this big tense thing around this hill. And it's a kind of a standoff. Then Saul hears, by the providence of God, Saul hears that the Philistines have attacked. And so as the king, he's got to get his priorities back into alignment. So he has to leave off from fighting David, and he has to go and fight the Philistines. All right, so he pulls his armies out, and they go to battle against the Philistines. So for the moment, David is safe. And what does he do? He heads deeper into the wilderness to the stronghold of Engedi. All right? And it came to pass, chapter 24, it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of Engedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel, and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. So they're up there in the wilderness with the caves and the wild goats leaping about. And he came to the sheepcotes by the way. And there was a cave. So the sheepcotes by the way. This area has so many little ravines and valleys. And on the sides of these things, there are caves. And these caves have often been used for sheepfolds. All right, so that's what the sheepcotes, by the way, are these caves where men have kept their sheep. All right. And Saul went in to cover his feet. That is King James Version language for go to the bathroom. Okay? So Saul goes into a cave and he goes to go to the bathroom. He doesn't know it, but in the back of the cave, David and his men are hiding in the darkness in the back of the cave. Saul comes into the entrance of the cave, goes in a little bit to do his business. He has no idea that David and his men are in the darkness deeper in the cave, right? It says in verse 4, and the men of David said to him, behold, the day which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good to thee. All right, so they say to him, now you can go get him. Now you can kill your enemy. Look at this. God has put him right in your lap. Right? And what does David do? It says, then David rose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. So what Saul does when he comes into the cave to go to the bathroom is he takes his robe off and lays it aside and goes to do his business. David kind of crawls up, sneaks up, and he takes his knife and he cuts the bottom of the robe off and he sneaks away with it. All right. It came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. This is the tender conscience that David has. Remember, David believes that Saul is the Lord's anointed, and that therefore Saul is out of bounds for David. He cannot put his hand against the Lord's anointed. All right? Touch not mine anointed, saith the Lord, and do my prophets no harm. Anyone who puts their hand against the children of God will be under the judgment of God. And so here, David's conscience smites him when he does just this little thing of cutting the bottom of the robe of Saul. And he said unto his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." All right, so he tells his men, this was not right for me to do this. All right, so David stayed his servants, "You guys stay here," with these words, and he suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also rose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, "My lord the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. So David humbles himself before Saul. And David said to Saul, "Wherefore hearest thou men's words, saying, 'Behold, David seeketh thy hurt'? Why are you listening to bad advice? Behold, this day thine eyes have seen how that the Lord hath delivered thee today into mine hand in the cave. And some bade me kill thee, but mine eye spared thee. And I said, 'I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed.' Moreover, my father, see the skirt of thy robe in mine hand. For in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not, know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it. I haven't done anything to you, but you've been hunting me to kill me. The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee, but my hand shall not be upon thee." Now this will become apparent later on. David saying, "I'm not going to be the one. All right? The Lord will avenge me of you, all right? But I'm not by my hand." All right? And so that's for further down. And as saith the proverb of the ancients, "Wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? The Lord therefore be judge, and judge between me and thee, and see and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand." All right, so David has made his case, all right, and he has waved the skirt of Saul's robe and says, "I could have killed you, all right, but I didn't." All right, God put you in my hand, and I could have avenged myself on you, but I didn't. All right. It came to pass when David had made an end of speaking these things, unto Saul, that Saul said, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, "Thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. And thou hast showed this day how that thou hast dealt well with me, for as much as when the Lord hath delivered me into thine hand, thou killest me not. For if a man find his enemy, will he let him go well away? Wherefore the Lord reward thee good for that thou hast done unto me this day. And now, behold, I know well that thou shalt surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thine hand. Swear now, therefore, unto me by the Lord, that thou wilt not cut off my seed after me, and that thou wilt not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David sware unto Saul, and Saul went home, but David and his men gat them up into the hold. All right, that's interesting. All right, so Saul gives forth when an emotional burst of false repentance. All right, you know, there are false conversions. There are emotional moments when people suddenly start thinking about God and divine things. How do you know if it's a genuine conversion or if it's a false conversion? Well, if it's a false conversion, it wears off rather quickly, right? You'll see, for example, one thing that very often happens is that a young wife and husband will become pregnant, and as part of the motherly nesting urge, the wife will begin to get interested in that nesting process. And part of that nesting process is a desire for God's blessing. And so they'll, you know, at her kind of moving it forward, they will start going to church, right? And they will begin to make plans to have the baby baptized. And you know, this is a good thing. I'm not saying that it's motivated by bad stuff. But really, what's going on is it's that nesting urge causing an interest in things that this person would not normally be interested in. Now, sometimes this is the beginning of something enduring and good. Other times, by the time the baby is 6 months old and starting to be a challenge, religion wears off. Right? And so there are people who, because of some life activity, they will suddenly get interested in church and in God, and they will start coming. But after the initial enthusiasm wears off, they basically begin to drift away. Why? Because they really weren't converted. Right? Otherwise, they would continue to grow in their love of God's word. But they were responding in an emotional way to some life event. And so they began to go to church. But as they sat there in church, they began to realize, this is really not for me. I don't really like this. And so they begin to drift away. So you start noticing that instead of being in church every week, they're in church every third Sunday. Then they're in church once every other month. And pretty soon people are going, whatever happened to that? Remember they used to sit in the... whatever happened to them? You know, and many churches and many people have had that experience. A true conversion is one that bears fruit in faithfulness and continuousness and constancy. All right. So anyway, that leaves us. So David confronts Saul. Saul is like, "You're right. You're right. I'm wrong. I know. Listen, just do me one favor. Swear to me that you will not wipe out my entire family when you become king." Because in the ancient Near East, that's what kings did. When you became king, you killed off everyone who could be possibly connected with any movement to threaten your reign. And so Saul, he says to David, "Swear to me that you won't do that." And David swears. Saul goes home. David says, "All right, guys, back up into the hills. We can't trust this guy. Even though he has just shown himself to be pious, we can't trust him." Why? Because he's talked like this before, right? And so David wants there to be a reconciliation, but David is watching, and he says, "All right, guys, back up into the hills." All right? And that's where we'll leave it off today. We are at the end of chapter 25. David and his men have gone back up into the hills, and we'll take it up from there next week.